Hello, and welcome to Knights of the Hardcover, a podcast dedicated to discussing and summarizing fantasy books, their lore, and all of the things that we love about them. My name is Brandon Castle, your Jarl of the West Coast, and joining me on this turtle crawl across the desert of Ephebi, they call him Flatulous, but not because he's the god of wind, it's Chris Lauer.
Oh, thank you. I am an eagle soaring ahead, looking for a tortoise to smash against some rocks. I'm ready to go.
All right, aggressive. And joining us also, you can find him gambling on the geometric capabilities of amphibians. It's Zach Mysick.
Hello, everyone. I've been spending a lot of time in Westeros, so I'm looking forward to getting into the Discworld here.
Nice. It's a good break from traditional fantasy. So that's what we're covering today. It's the 1992 fiction novel written by Terry Pratchett, Small Gods.
Now, 92, I don't know about huh? You.
1992. I know, I was a little surprised by that as well.
Wow.
Amazing how relevant it still is today. And I don't know about you guys, but this book made me really hungry for turtle soup. They mentioned it like 100 times in the first 100 pages, and I was like, I want to eat that damn turtle.
Have you had turtle soup in the past?
Yeah, it's really good. Turtle's actually incredibly tasty.
Ew. Wow. I would never think about eating turtle.
First time.
It seems tough. Like, it'd be really chewy.
It is a little bit chewy. It's on the chewier side. But as far as amphibians and reptiles go, it's probably up there for one of my favorites.
Okay. High bar.
Hey, frog legs are delicious. So it is a high bar. I wanted to just open things up. Just get your understanding or an understanding of what your level of Terry Pratchett is. Have you read it before? Are you familiar with kind of the Discworld that he's created? Just kind of set that tone.
Yeah, so I am a complete newbie for Terry Pratchett, Discworld. I don't know anything about it. I think I watched like a YouTube video about the general Discworld lore, you know, so I kind of understand that tortoise flying through space, elephants on the tortoise's back carrying the Discworld logistics. Don't know anything about it. This was my first one. It was a good first book. What about you, Zach?
What about you? Yeah.
This is my second Discworld book. My first one I read a few months ago called Equal Rights, and it's like the first book of like the witches series, so focused more on like witches and wizards too in that book. And I really enjoy that one. That's kind of how deep my knowledge is. I do know that there's like 41 books in the Discworld. There's a lot that are standalone, and then there's a lot that are part of like a series. I know there's like witches, wizards, guards. There's a whole bunch of different series like within them, but they're pretty fun. I'm enjoying them.
Yeah, I'm on the same boat as Chris here. I haven't read any Terry Pratchett. I've started it a couple times, but then just got distracted with other things. So I was pretty excited to read one all the way through, see what all the hype's about. So I'm excited to get into it. And on that note, I'll just run through a quick summary of what happened in this book. And then, as usual, we're going to handle some questions, go through some of our favorite parts, you know, yada, yada, the usual. So kick it off. Yeah, we'll kick it off. I'm going to try to hammer through this one here. So the book takes place in the land of Omnia, a monarchy run by the priesthood of the great god Om. They're waiting for the eighth prophet of Om to be revealed and take the leadership role of Omnia. Our main character, Brother, is a simple, kind novice with a perfect memory that is kind of at the bottom of that priesthood hierarchy. One day while tending the garden, he hears a turtle talking to him, claiming to be the great god Om. Om reveals that he doesn't know how he turned into a turtle, but it happened 3 years ago and most of his powers are gone now. At the top of the hierarchy is a man named Vorbis, the leader of the Quisition, which is basically just like a religious torture group. Vorbis has agreed to lead a group to Ephebi, which is a rival town, to parlay with their leaders to negotiate on peace. Due to Brother's great memory, Vorbis elects to bring him with the convoy to Ephebi to make peace with their people. We also learn about the secret underground society called the Turtle Movement that aims to change how things work in Omnia by killing Vorbis, capturing a man named Didactylus in Ephebi, and stealing a valuable book of his and convincing people to follow the symbol of the turtle. On the way to Ephebi, we learn that Om lost his powers because no one in Omnia actually believes in God anymore, only in the hierarchy of the government. Brother is the last believer. Om uses negotiates with one of the other gods of the ocean to save their boat in a storm on the way to Ephebe. We also see that Vorbis is making mirror signals to someone in the desert. The people are told that Ephebe is full of demons, but when they get there, the place is just full of philosophers and deep thinkers, and naked people, a lot of naked people. Brother likes the way things are here, and Om can feel him sort of becoming a prophet. The Omnians meet with what's called the Tyrant, who's the elected official of Ephebe, or the elected leader, to discuss peace. The Tyrant already has a peace treaty ready to go for them to sign. The turtle Om and brother go to the philosophers and ask for help to figure out why Om is still a turtle. They find Didactylus, who is going to be the cheapest option for them. They use his library. They get a bunch of books about gods, and they learn a little bit more about kind of the structure of those gods. Vorbis and brother take a late night stroll through the Labyrinth Palace and find their way outside of the walls, where an army of Omnians wait to capture the castle. In order to preserve all of the knowledge, brother memorizes all the books in the library, even though he can't read or write. Then he burns down the library at Vorbis's command. One soldier, Sergeant Simony, betrays the Omnians to save Didactylus because he is part of that turtle movement, which is based on a theory of Didactylus's. They all escape by motorboat and head to Omnia so brother could testify against Vorbis. Vorbis chases after, but the god of the sea destroys basically all of them, all of their boats. Vorbis, Om, and brother wash up on the shore of the desert. Didactylus, his assistant, and Simony survived the crash and show up in Omnia to break in and reveal what they know and change the structure there. Brother, Vorbis, and Om go through the desert to reach Omnia. Lots of hijinks can ensue. Vorbis knocks out brother eventually and returns to Omnia, claiming that he had visions of the god Om and becomes the next prophet. Om is left out in the desert, but desperately tries to get back to brother, his only follower. The Didactylus and assistants create this machine to ram the doors of the main chapel of Omnia. Brother is promoted to archbishop when he returns to Vorbis in Omnia. He confronts Vorbis. Vorbis gets pissed off, says he must be tortured because he's not speaking the truth of God. Then drone strikes Vorbis from the eagle above, and brother becomes the true prophet. Ephebe Nabal shows up to destroy Omnia. Brother tries to negotiate, but they're not having it. Goes to the lands of the gods in the sky and fights the other gods because they're treating Discworld like a board game. He ends their reigns and helps the Omnians fight back the Navy. Brother makes a democratic theocracy and becomes leader for 100 years before dying. Throughout the book, when characters die, they go to visit Death, who tells them they must cross this long desert to face their judgment. It's basically, between heaven and hell type thing, whatever that's called, purgatory. And so after 100 years, Vorbis has still not gotten to or across the desert. So brother shows up and helps him across. And the last thing we kind of see is this janitor from Omnia named Lutzi meets with what's called the quote unquote abbot, and who's playing chess with Death. So, woo! That's the summary. I think I got everything in there for the most part. A lot happened in the books. Thank you. Thank you. Hold the applause. I'm going for my EGOT this year. So we'll start.
Great job.
Yeah, you did a good job, Brandon.
I think that was, I think I'm going to be nominated for an iHeart Radio Award with that one. So
I think so too.
Look out for that one.
Yeah.
In the mail.
Yeah.
Just to start things off, easy bridge. What did you guys think of the book?
All right. So, I got this book at a 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10. Yeah. Which might be kind of low. But the reason I have it at a 7 is because I liked it. I don't have any like major criticisms or anything of it. But it wasn't the easiest. I had to keep coming back to this. I'm not sure I ever would have finished it if we weren't, planning to do this summary podcast for it and stuff. For some reason, it was just hard for me to get into this and stay in it, even though I enjoyed it. But I just couldn't go above 7 on it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Zach, what do you think?
I'm kind of close with you, Chris. I'm giving it a 7.5, maybe closer to 8, but probably 7.5. I really liked it. It was kind of tougher. I can only really compare it to the other Discworld book. And I think I rate Equal Rights as like an 8. I think that one is more whimsical and easier to understand and a little shorter. I really enjoy this plot. I thought the humor was good. I thought he did a good job toying the lines of kind of not like mocking religion, but like commentary on religion and politics. I thought it was kind of like a tad bit too long for what the story actually was, because I think it's like 400 some pages. And I think you can trim that down a bit. What about you, Brandon?
Yeah, I mean, I'll stick. I'm right there with you guys. I'm gonna give a little bit higher, an 8 out of 10. I kind of went into this with a young adult mindset. I know Terry Pratchett isn't specifically young adult, but this really felt, for the sake of not pissing off everyone that's Terry Pratchett fans, but like, it felt like philosophy for teenagers is kind of how the best way I would describe this book. I thought there's a lot of really good themes. I thought the humor was pretty good throughout, but in the end, it was like, it was really trying to be deeper than it was, but it was like throwing it in your face with like what the metaphors were and everything like that. And so that fell a little flat for me, but overall, I really liked the characters. I liked, you know, the idea of the small gods and everything like that. So overall, it was a good book. The first half of the book, I'd give like a 9 out of 10. The second half of the book was like a 6 out of 10 probably for me. So that's kind of how it went. But,
yeah, I would agree with that.
Overall, I landed at like an 8.
Yeah, fair enough. Kind of all on the same page here, I think. We all really enjoyed it. I got to say, I thought it was pretty funny. There was a lot of times that I was like, oh my God, that was really good. And one of the funniest parts I thought was near the end, when Om got dropped by the eagle right onto Vorbis, and it, when it hit him, or whoever it hit, I can't remember. I think it was Vorbis. That was just like hilarious. I was literally laughing out loud when that happened. or the part where Brother was like getting led through the maze, and he's like, oh, and then I take 56 paces this way. And it was like really long how many paces he was taking and the exact paces he was taking. And he's like, don't know why they bothered to put that thing over my eyes. Like, it's not that hard. <you know? laughs> Just pretty good.
Yeah, that and just Om's struggle of like being once a great god, but now he's just this tiny turtle, and like, you know, dealing with how he can't do anything. Like, he's constantly like, I will smite you, you know, I will, you will die in the lands of your father, stuff like that, which is always like really funny because he can't do anything.
Yeah, he was probably the funniest character. I think he had the best jokes, best humor. Brother, I think, kinda, was like a very. No, sorry, go ahead, Chris.
I was gonna say it did kind of grate on me a little bit, like how he just kept getting mad at people and being like, "I am the great Om, and listen to me," blah blah blah. It's like, okay, I get it, bro. Like, understand your situation a little bit.
Yeah, and I also really liked the character that they. Oh my God, Didactylus. He's just, everything that he said was just so earnest, but absolutely ridiculous at the same time. But then in the end, it turns out he's right about the world. Like, he's the actual one that knows everything. Like, it just, all of that really, really landed with me with him and his assistant. So I think his name was like Earn or something like that. But yeah. I liked all that stuff too.
Absolutely.
Cool. So I guess we can just go through some plot points here. Anything in particular, any segments that you really, really liked, or parts of the book you were really into?
Well, just like the beginning, I thought was kind of interesting how they set up the religion before we met Om. Kind of, you're wondering who this god's gonna be, because it's like once every 700 years, right? There's a new prophet, and this is gonna be like the seventh time or eighth time a prophet's gonna show itself. And I did think it's funny when they say, it's kind of like preparing for an audit. You become like more critical of everything. So there's like a lot more like purifying the town, which just meant like killing the sinners, or who they deemed were the sinners. So I thought that was kind of like a good setup. And then you see Om, who was like that turtle that we were first introduced to, who got dropped by the eagle. And
yeah,
we see him talk to Brother. And I think that's kind of like a fun setup. You're kind of, I thought you did a good job kind of explaining the world in kind of like a couple pages, and then showing us who the two characters are going to be.
Yeah, I thought that was great as well. All of the religion, it was interesting. The way they set up their entire theocracy was really, I mean, it was very in line with kind of like the Catholicism hierarchy, I guess, around the world, with like kind of the Pope at the top instead of a prophet. It was very similar to that, but it made it grounded in reality to the point where it was a lot easier to kind of grasp what they were talking about, which I thought was really useful. Tool there.
I like how they muddied the water in terms of like who was actually in charge of the church, like brother was constantly like, mm-hmm. well, this guy's ahead of this guy, and then that guy's over here on this branch of the tree, and no, but like you get the idea. Obviously, Vorbis is like the de facto head, but I think in theory there's somebody ahead of him somewhere in the hierarchy, but it was so purposely complicated that you couldn't really tell. You know, I liked how they set that up like that.
Yeah, at the end. That ambiguity was cool because it provided confusion, but like a lot of fantasy books have a very similar organization in it. Like I'm thinking like the White Cloaks in the Wheel of Time, or the Inquisitors and Mistborn is kind of the same with the Steel Ministry. So all of those never actually take like a hard look into the structure of those religions and how they operate, and then like examine the gods. You should just kind of like, yeah, they torture people because for their gods. So it was cool to like focus solely on that religious institution and get a deep dive. Also understanding that none of them actually had any idea what was going on within their actual organization. So yeah, all that was great.
I also really liked how you meet Brother. You meet Vorbis, and they're very distinct characters. Brother, you pretty much think of him, he's just kind of like a big dumb idiot, right? And Vorbis is this like very smart guy. And you don't really see a lot of useful traits in Brother. And then when Vorbis meets him and he learns about his memory, I thought that Terry did a good job of showing how Vorbis was like clearly like, oh, this is very useful to me, and how he kind of shepherded Brother along and it noticed how useful he could be. Whereas like other people never, they just thought Brother was just some big idiot. But Vorbis was like, no, this is perfect. This guy's devout and he literally doesn't forget anything. This guy could be very useful to me.
Yeah. Vorbis has the perfect cult leader mindset. You know, he finds the person that's going to be loyal to him, but like not smart enough to understand, but still has some like, you know, useful qualities. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And everyone was so afraid to talk to Vorbis too. Those are some like the funny parts where like Vorbis wouldn't say anything and someone would just like keep on talking because he's like thought he's like digging himself a hole with Vorbis. That was really funny how it really showed that everyone is like terrified of Vorbis, even though they're all part of like the same religion. They're all like, you know, working for the same organization.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite scenes from this was when they showed up to a Phoebe and they had been told like all of their lives that these people were going to be demons. You know, they're godless humans that are going to like eat each other, or eat you. Or it's just like, they were just like these disgusting people. And then they show up and they're just like a bunch of philosophers. And like, there's a guy running through the street naked, trying to like figure out something, and all of the stuff about them getting like perfume baths and like the jokes that they made about like, you know, where's all your incense, you stupid philosopher? Like all of that was just incredible. So I loved all the time we spent in a Phoebe was incredible, but especially that first part.
Oh yeah. To get there. A Phoebe, I think it was like the peak of the book. All my favorite parts are probably from a Phoebe. I love, kind of talked about it, like the maze. I thought the maze was so funny. That might have been like one of the funniest lines to me was when the Ephebians were explaining what the maze was, and there was kind of like, yeah, like our ancestors built this maze a while ago, like it's pretty redundant, we don't like need it, but you know, out of respect to them, we do like maintain it every week and make sure that like everything is like up to date, you know, just out of respect. I thought that was pretty funny.
Just out of respect, you know, we have our traps set up, you know, just as tradition would hold.
Yep, oil them down just like the ancestors wanted. We don't want it, but they do.
In a Phoebe, I like the slaves in a Phoebe. And when Brother was talking to the slaves, he's like, oh, you're a slave? But then the slave's like, yeah, I get a couple days off, you know, and I could buy myself out of slavery if, you know, if I work hard enough and all this stuff. And Brother was like, he was just so shocked. And that was one of my favorite things, is like their elected official is called the tyrant, you know, and the workers are called slaves. It's like, they're just labels. And it's funny, like back in Omnia, they're free. They're free people. But Brother's like, I don't get days off, you know, and they have the priest. The priest is the head instead of a tyrant, but Vorbis is a fucking tyrant, and the tyrant from Phoebe is just like the president, you know. So
Yeah, saying. the use of semantics in general in the book was incredible. Just like, you know, yeah. Framing people to be bad or good, but that's just like not the reality of the situation was very good.
Yep. Yeah.
I agree with that. Anything else? Any other parts of the book that you wanted to talk about?
Staying in a Phoebe, when they go out with like the philosophers on that one bar, I also thought that was pretty funny too, where the philosophers are talking and they don't believe in the God, but then all of a sudden like things start happening, but they're like, oh, well, of course we believe in this other God, you know, and it just kept on spiraling and they ended up like believing in a bunch of gods because they kept on pissing off all the gods around them. I thought that was good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. All of the actual God interactions in the Phoebe was very funny. Like they were like mm-hmm. actually like sending lightning down when people would say bad things, and like philosophers were known to get like smited by these people. It was very funny.
Yeah.
yeah, I really liked that.
Gods are funny. Yeah.
What did you guys think of? So after they're in the Phoebe and they make their escape and they're in that desert, we did meet someone who was like worshiping, like the only worshiper of some small gods.
Yeah,
to try to like, keep them alive. I thought that was like a super interesting concept. Just like one guy, and he just believes in all gods just to try to keep them alive.
Yeah, I like that. I really like the desert stuff that they did. What do you not to go away from that, but what did you guys think about when Vorbis surprise woke up from his stupor and hit Brella? Like, was he planning that the whole time, or how did he get the strength to do that? How did you guys feel about that?
I mean, I took it as that was just a spur of the moment plan. He saw an opportunity and took it because there's no way he had the foresight to like plan all of that ahead of time.
But wasn't he like completely incapacitated?
I think he was just knocked out. Like he just had a concussion. And then when he woke up, he's like, oh shit, I can just take advantage of this situation. We're in the desert. No one will.
Yeah, he might have been playing dead a bit too to regain the strength.
True. Know. Yeah.
But why? Like, wasn't he still likes brother at this point?
If you have an opportunity to become the prophet, you take it, I suppose.
That's probably what it was. He probably thought that brother was the prophet, and yeah, just acted out of self-interest there.
I'd pick a nit on that. I didn't think it totally worked for me, that part.
It was also quick, too. I mean, that was just like a couple, like it just turned immediately. It was a couple pages where it's just all of a sudden brother was in control, and then they're back at Omnia, and Vorbis is the prophet, and you're like, holy shit, that happened quickly.
Yeah. But to go back to what you were saying, Zach, the stuff in the desert was really good, and especially liked that guy that was worshiping all the small gods, and the concept of the small gods, I think, is a really interesting, probably the most interesting lore aspect of this book, in my opinion, where it's just like you believe in a god, and that's how the gods get their power. It's kind of like American Gods by Neil Gaiman, but just like a really fun concept and a great way to write like a fiction story with a fantasy fiction story.
Yeah, I got some real Stormlight Archive vibes from this, like Spren. They were kind of these gods were just like roaming around the desert until someone believed in them, and then they became kind of like sentient after that. So it really gave me some like Spren vibes where, you know, they need to make that connection to remember their past. Really gave me vibes of that. Yeah.
Do we know what Om is the god of? Because we met like a lot of like gods of the sea, god of like storms and lightning and very specific gods. Is he just a god because people think he is like a god or like what a god should be? Is that kind of his?
I think that like vibe? I think he would be like considered like the Christian god. Whereas like the Christian god's not a god of anything; it's just God. Whereas like you, maybe like back in the day where people would worship the sea, you know, like that's how you get the god of the sea. I don't think you have to be the god of something. I think you can just be like the god, like a god, just because people believe it.
And I think you kind of, once you get followers, you choose kind of like what you want to be the god of, sort of. That's what the vibe I was getting in a Phoebe is, like they just kind of choose what they're the god of. But I don't know if that's 100% accurate. I think Om was the god of fire insults. That's what I think he was. He had some good ones in there, so that would be my guess.
Yeah.
Obviously there's big like religious undertones in this, but you can kind of tie a lot of that back to other aspects of life, like politics, cult leaders, all that. I was watching The Vow on HBO right before I started this book. And so I was getting like a real Keith Raniere vibes from all of this, similar, like, you know, isolating people from the rest of the world and, you know, evangelism being kind of the top priority of it, not actually the word, but getting more people to follow your beliefs, and then kind of aggregating all power to one person and what they say and interpret the word is the rule of law. It's all very prevalent in, you know, modern religion. A lot of modern religions, you know, looking at, I don't want to like harp on religions too much, but looking at like Latter-day Saints who believe in, or Mormons who believe in Joseph Smith being this prophet of the God and everything he said was the word of God. And, you know, Eden is in Missouri in America, like stuff like that. You know, he just decided, he just decided what, how things went. And, knocking on random doors was kind of the cornerstone of Mormonism, is getting more followers, and then we get more power, and then you get more followers, and it's just a snowball effect. So that was really prevalent in all of this, and you could tie it to, you know, anything that's happening in politics over the last 5 years, anything that's happened in religion over the last thousands of years. So what did you guys think about, you know, you guys are both from Catholic backgrounds. How did this kind of speak to you in those senses?
Well, it was definitely targeted at religion, like you said, or at least it seems like it. A question that I wanted to ask you guys that kind of ties into this is, like, do you think Terry Pratchett is trying to make a point here, you know, and like, what point is he trying to make? And to be honest with you, I don't know what point he's trying to make. Like, I don't know if he's trying to say that all religion is bad, or if he's trying to say that the Catholic Church is bad because people don't believe it anymore. They only believe in the structure. I don't know, because you get to Ephebe and Didactylos was cool, but a lot of the philosophers did a lot of stupid shit too. And so it's like his satire is very pointed, and it seems to be pointed a lot of directions. I would say, if I had to guess, I would say Terry Pratchett is not very religious. And I think he makes, if the point of this book is to make the point that religion, organized religion, is stupid, I think that this book kind of makes that point pretty well. I don't know if that's what, I don't know if that's the point he's trying to make, or if this is just like, I don't know, I guess. What do you think, Zach?
Yeah, I can't agree with what you're saying. I was raised Catholic, so that's kind of the only background I'm bringing into this. I saw like some critiques where there might have been some other like non-Catholic religions that he was critiquing that people like pinpointed certain things on. But I definitely read it as him critiquing organized religion. Like he has already talked about, just like that concept of a church growing so large that it becomes about the church itself and not about like the actual faith. But reading it, I definitely felt like he had a heavy hand of making fun of organized religion, but I never felt like he was making fun of people who had faith. Like, I never felt like the people who have faith are like the butt of any jokes. I kind of thought that maybe he doesn't have faith himself, but it seemed like he was, he had respect for the people who did. So that's kind of like where I kind of took it.
Yeah, I think it's larger than religion. You know, I think religion's an easy vessel because it's the oldest kind of form of this centralized power that we have in history. But I think it's more of a, you know, an observation of, if you give all power to one individual and make their word law, that ultimately leads to a society where, you know, power structures are the driving religion, not the actual religion itself. And so it's kind of the, you know, growing up, I was Presbyterian growing up, and one of the things they love to say is that, like, I'm not religious, but I'm a spiritual person. So I think this was more of a, like, a takedown on religion as a structure, not as a faith. So if you have that faith and you truly believe in those things, that is an important thing and a cornerstone of life. But if you're just a person that, you know, wants to follow somebody or wants to, you know, have someone dictate how they live their life, that can lead to society that's really not driven by anything but impressing the person that's one step higher than you. So I think it was a larger than just religion, but religion's the easiest vessel to portray that in.
Yeah, like you can't just take a shortcut and decide to believe and whatever struggle. You can't just be like, yep, I'm a Catholic, and so I just believe what Catholics believe. You know, it kind of seems like he's saying, like, no, you have to do the groundwork. Like, you have to critically think about these things. It's like, it's okay if you believe in gods, but why do you do it? And if you're only doing it because that's the way it is, then maybe that's a problem.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point too. And I think that leads into like these religions thousands of years old. And so throughout those years, there's been these different structures of religion that have taken the original words of Abraham, of Jesus, of whoever your God or your prophet Messiah is. They've taken those words and they've kind of used them to their own purposes, you know, like tithing and all of that came through the Roman Catholic Church and, you know, whatever 1400s. It's been over the years adjusted to meet the demands of man rather than just to satisfy the religion of God. So I think that's a really interesting point with this. And then, you know, like I said earlier, like this is philosophy for teenagers, but it does like spark some really deep thinking. I hate when it's so in your face and obvious with kind of what they're trying to get across. But this way, you know, we're discussing it right now, so apparently it's more ambiguous than I was originally thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that was like his intention was to kind of, you know, you could give it to like a high schooler and they could clearly pick up, you know, themes, or you could give it to an adult and they would too. But that was kind of what you're saying, Brandon. Like, I thought it was funny too when Om was asked by brother about all these commandments that he had. Om was like, what are you talking about? That's like I've never heard those before, and that's kind of shows just kind of like how perverted some of that stuff can get eventually hundreds of years later. But yeah, I like that too. And I thought too, just like with the Ephesians, I feel like they showed another side of, I almost feel that like as America, just because like how they elect someone, because it's like everyone has a vote, except if they weren't poor or foreign or if they were a woman. And it's like every 5 years they elect a tyrant. We have to prove that, you know, that they're the most honest, trustworthy person. But then as soon as they're elected, it was made like crystal clear to everyone that he must have been like a criminal madman and totally out of touch if he was able to get elected like that. And then, you know, they do the same thing 5 years later. And like one of the quotes that I liked was, and then 5 years later, they elected another one just like him. And really, it was amazing how intellectual people kept on making the same mistakes. And I thought that was like, I mean, pretty heavy handed, but I thought that was like, I can like that applies 30 years later after he wrote this.
Yeah, it's like you can really think of this book as just like a criticism of society in general, whether it be religion or government or whatever. He definitely just finds clever ways to show you the issues in society. You know, it kind of makes me wonder what he does believe. Like, what does he think is a good part of society? Because I see what he doesn't like about society, or at least I think I see what he doesn't like about society. So it'd be interesting to see what he thinks works.
I think what he likes is like the community aspect, people. I don't have like the quote on me, but another like really cool quote that I liked was with death, when he was like, you may think that like hell or torment is being surrounded by people, like you will quickly find out that that's not like the truth. And I thought that was like a pretty powerful statements of like community is really important, and that's where you'll find peace, because Vorbis like couldn't do it alone. He had to wait until till brother to be there. So I almost took that as kind of what the author just like views of, take all the politics, the organized religion out of it, and just get down to like people, and like that's what's really important.
Yeah, and well, I guess the last thing I'll say on that is I think the message or the perception that you get out of the book really depends on kind of what previous experience you're taking into it. So like you guys with Catholicism, you with like Presbyterianism, and then also being really interested in cults. I think it's easy to find and pick like what you take out of it based off your life experience. So in that aspect, it's a really valuable book.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to mention before we move on to the next section is the way that death is handled in this story. Kind of seems like, and Zach, you've read two books at least, you might know better than me, but it kind of seems like when death shows up, he almost, the character of death almost seems like he wants to make it as comfortable as possible. And you, like, the people don't even realize that they died. They don't experience their death per se. They just kind of like are dead now. And then they slowly realize, oh, there's something different. And death is like, yeah, there's something different going on. And he's like, you got to go out here. You got to go do your thing. And they just kind of slowly come to terms with it, except for Vorbis, that, you know, oh, maybe it's time to move on. And, oh, maybe this isn't so bad. And what do you guys think about how that was handled?
No, I mean, I really like death. I think death's my favorite character. I'm not like rooting for people to die, but it is fun. And the first time I saw death, I was like afraid, like, oh crap. Cause I've heard of death as like the skeleton guy, but I don't know. He seems very like peaceful, very comforting. It seems like all of his messages are like tailored to that person. He takes his time with them, but also kind of is firm with them as well too. I really like death. I really like how he's written. I think he's a fun character to have in this kind of world, because he can pop up in every book. You know, if there's going to be a death, you kind of know that you'll see him at some points.
Yeah, and it's interesting too. Like, death is not like a Satan. It's not like the ultimate god. It's just a guy that's like, hey, this is the realization of the situation you're in right now. I'm going to help you get through it. Your final judgment is at the end of it, at the end of the desert, which kind of makes me think that like throughout that desert, you might learn stuff about your life and who you were and all that. And at the end, that's when, you know, I don't know if there's a heaven or hell here, but that's when you get your ultimate judgment. And so it's nice to have a character that's like just a straight shooter with everybody. And like, this is the realization or the reality of the situation you're in. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we got some questions here. I think we all kind of put in a couple questions. I might read one of these. Like, I kind of like, so let's say you are, it's been 700 years and it's time to remind people that you exist and get your power back. What's your move?
Ooh, I think I would rip like an awesome guitar solo at some sweet concert. Something like that. Really get the people.
Are you going to be an animal at the time too?
I think that would only help. Like, you know, it's like Ozzy Osbourne. Instead of biting off the head of a bat, I would be a bat and bite off the head of a human being and then rip a guitar solo afterwards. Tough to not follow a god that pulls off something like that, you know?
Yeah, that'd be pretty sick, you know? Better than a burning bush.
Yeah, that's if that even happened, am I right, guys? what about y'all? What would you be your gaining of followers act?
Jeez. Okay, so in this situation, am I like turtle form, kind of dropped in?
You don't have to be turtle. You don't have to be turtle. This is just one of the many times that he's popped down to Earth to kind of do his thing.
Okay. I mean, he like knows everything, so I'd probably tell people like their past and their future. Or maybe doesn't know the future, but he knows everyone's like past and stuff. So maybe start telling people's like their past. If I was like in turtle form, I guess you can't speak to like everyone. I don't know. Honestly, I'd probably like create like a Twitter account and like tweet predictions and like wait for things to come true. Like amass like a Twitter follower, you know, something like that. And, like spread gossip. Be like the Demois of the Discworld and just spread gossip around town, and then people will start worshiping you.
It's gonna be tough.
Drop the bomb to your arm.
It's gonna be tough to use a smartphone if you're like a turtle or a monkey or something. There's gonna be a learning curve for sure.
use your head. Yeah, I'll probably like draw stuff in the sand if I'm a turtle, just like make it known. But yeah, if I have like a smartphone, I'd definitely try to be on social media and build up a following that way. That seems to work out for people.
I would be if this was happening in like 2020. Your idea sparked something in me, Zach. I think I would become like a sports bettor, but just never lose. You know?
Yeah.
You're not going to gain a following. You're just going to gain a lot of money.
You would. If you're the first person.
Well, if you're 100% on like an entire year's worth of like NBA basketball, people would be like, okay, something's going on here.
Dude, MGM's going to cut you off. The IRS is going to start looking into you. Like you're going to have a tough time finding a sports book after that.
Yeah. No, the IRS can't look into an animal, you know. That just be
maybe you could be a ref and just like shave points for other people and gain followers that way.
Yeah. Oh, you know what I should do is I should just be an athlete. I should just play basketball really well.
And then also shave points, get people money, and then you get followers.
Right. Very true.
What you need to do is fill out like the perfect March Madness bracket and then invite everyone to like an arena to watch like the championship game to see if you can like have the perfect bracket. And then when you do win and you made history, emotions are high, then you start like spreading like the good word of Om in front of like a crowded theater.
There you go. Another option I think would be good is just to, you know, maybe be like a rat of some kind or a small rodent. And then find a chef that's kind of up and coming, and then you could just hide under their hat and just make really good food and get followers that way. I think there's a documentary about that somewhere out there.
Animated?
Yeah, it's an animated documentary. But it's a recreation of sorts.
Yeah. You guys have any questions?
Well, I guess just to kind of piggyback off of that, like if you were, you know, a small god and you kind of decide what, or, you know, even like a mid-sized god, let's say you're a mid-sized god, you get to decide if you want to be like an animal, an inanimate object, you want to be a statue, like what would you choose as kind of the way you manifest to people?
Ooh.
I would be a statue that every once in a while, like every once in 5 years, just has a single tear of blood.
it's very Mother Mary Catholic of you. Catholicism, that Catholic high school is really bleeding through now.
Yeah, absolutely. There you go. That's a deep cut for you, for your Catholic kids.
Jeez, I don't know. I'm having a hard time thinking. Like, I don't know. Maybe like a really big like tree or something. I don't know. Something cool to look at.
A nice tree would be, I think that would be like the ideal. Like a really, really nice tree.
Like the Chitea.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I can't remember it in Lord of the Rings, the elven, like the father tree that they have too. But I think for mine, I would choose like a burrito. Or no. A taquito that when you take a bite out of it, though, it like kind of reforms back. And so, you know, you take a bite out of it, but then it comes back. So you're just kind of a constantly regenerating taquito that can also speak to people. I think that would be, I haven't had dinner tonight yet. I'm really hungry. Yeah. All I can think about is Mexican food.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, I was wondering if small gods existed now, kind of like what would they be and who would you worship? But I feel like my answers would be super lame. It'd just be like my iPhone. Like that'd be like the ultimate god that I worship.
I think that'd be most people's probably.
Smart kind of bummed me out. Bummed me out thinking about
smartphones, money, gods. Obviously. Yeah, money would be a big one.
Can you imagine how strong and powerful the smartphone god would be? I mean, they have a hell of a following worldwide. They can mobilize everyone immediately.
Oh my gosh. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, kind of cliche too, but of course, like Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, they would probably manifest in some just completely toxic form, but would be very powerful. Very powerful.
I think like maybe clothing would be like a big, like a strong god, you know, like the god of like fashion or something.
Sure, yeah, fashion. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe a big one right now.
Politics, there'd be a couple politics god.
Oh, there's no gods in politics.
Oh, God.
They'd be like a Gen Z god and a millennial god.
That'd be funny. I love that.
God, that Gen Z god would be the worst. Am I right, guys? The younger generation, screw them.
Oh my God, yeah. If there's anything I hate, it's the younger generation.
Mm-hmm. Right, all right.
Symphony Bar. My favorite chocolate bar.
The god of the Symphony Bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. You'd be a taquito, I'd be a Symphony Bar.
Man, we're really hitting. We got the main course and the dessert. We're hitting all the stops here.
this is bad for anybody that doesn't like. This isn't a video. It's just a podcast. But you know, look how big this Symphony
Holy
Bar.
Holy cow!
It's a mega. It's a giant.
That might be the Symphony God. That might be it right there. You're eating absolutely. Currently.
Yeah. Well, after reading this book here.
Hold on. I want to do one more on that one.
Okay.
I want to follow up. What would be like the worst god out there right now? Like that has, you know, a pretty strong following, but the one that's just like the most despicable, like
the
has
QAnon god.
It's literally just Trump.
just plug in any word, the MAGA god, the QAnon god,
oh my God.
JFK Jr. god, like I don't know.
That'd probably be the worst. Maybe like I don't know, like
I'd like to see dark Brandon would be an interesting one.
I think just for me personally, you know, I'm not a car guy and I've had a lot of experience with car guys, but I think the car god would be like the worst, douchiest god out there. Like the one that just really has the identity all around. Like So Elon Musk.
Basically. Yeah.
I'm not convinced he's not. So there's so many out there. There's people are so dedicated to just one thing these days.
There's a lot of fandoms too that might be scary if they have a god.
The waifu god. Oh.
Ew. Gross.
Gross. All right, that was a bad question. Moving on. I can't think about this anymore.
What about our favorite question, kind of a recurring question for us? As big Brandon Sanderson fans, all of us, we like to do this. This question, the who is Hoyd of this book. If you don't know Brandon Sanderson's work and Hoyd, he's basically a character that shows up in every Cosmere book, and he could be a big character, could be a small character, but he's always there. So just kind of a fun running gag here. Who is Hoyd? I think to me, there's really one pick for this book. What do you guys think?
I think there's only one pick too.
The janitor. Is that the what janitor? Yeah, the janitor.
Oh, no, janitor. I was going to say Nimrod.
What?
The janitor?
You mean the priest that was a dick?
Numerod?
The janitor died.
No, the janitor is like friends with death.
Yeah. No, that's how he's like dying. Like he died and like this is how death is like guiding him to the afterlife.
I don't think so. Okay.
I kind of took him as some sort of like a otherworldly being.
Oh. Yeah, that's right. He was like, because at the end, he kind of just goes to the room with whatever the abbot is and death. And he's like, what's up, guys? You playing chess? You know, like knight to R4. You know, that's how you win. Like he seemed pretty casual with them, and he wasn't going through the desert. So I assume that he was in like, I don't know, the death's main chambers or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Nimrod's not bad. He's an asshole enough to be Hoyd for sure.
Man, talk about a character I thought was going to be a big part of the story, and then we just didn't see for like 300 pages.
Yeah, that's a good point. He did seem like he was going to be something, and then he just wasn't.
Yeah, he was just kind of like the, you know, dickhead teacher. Yeah, but yeah, I think it's got to be the janitor. It's the only one that makes sense. Or like, I guess if you wanted to say like, whoever the abbot is, but I don't know what that is. So,
yep, I'm sure in future Discworld books we might figure out the answers to some of these questions.
Yeah, we're significantly under resourced on this one, so we just don't know. go ahead.
Well, I'll just say, like, on that note, after you guys have read your first Mistborn book, are you guys interested in more Mistborn books? if so, is there kind of like a Mistborn series or not Mistborn, Discworld, Discworld series
I that love you're Mistborn. More interested in?
Yeah.
We can talk about, all right, we're switching topics. Mistborn, guys. What do you think? Mistborn.
Yeah, I would say, Zach, I'm not super excited to dive back into Discworld. I liked it, but I didn't like it so much that I'm like, okay, now I have to read all 50 of these Discworld books or whatever. But I think the Death series of books, starting with Mort, I think that would probably be the one I'm most interested in. I've heard Guards is good as well.
Yeah, I think this isn't a book I'm gonna ever like physically read again. I think if I go on like a, you know, 6-hour road trip or something, this would be a great one to throw on and listen to the audiobook for. But I, similar to Chris, had a very tough time reading, like, I guess they don't have chapters here, but reading more than like 20 pages at a time. I had to set it down. And so this is either, I don't know, a good thing for like a side book or for an audiobook for me going forward.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. Like I said, I read like the first Witches book and I like that. So I think I'm going to keep on reading the Witches in Death and then maybe try some others. But I enjoy these books. But for me, it's definitely like a, hey, I don't know what else to read right now. I need a break from my other stuff. Cool, I'll pick up like a Discworld book. That's kind of like the vibe I have. I'm not in any rush to read all of them. But when I'm bored, I'll pick one up.
Yeah, I can't believe we went this whole pod so far without mentioning the fact that there's no chapters. Gotta say, hated it. I didn't
like it.
You can. There's definitely places that you can break this up into chapters, and I don't know. Are all Discworld books like this?
At least equal rights. That one too is like that. Where every now and then there'll be like a double paragraph space where you could kind of take a break or.
Yes.
Some of those like indicators, but I agree because I don't always need to end on a chapter, but I do like stopping after I finish a chapter. Same. And that was annoying. And also too, if we're talking about the book itself, most of the footnotes didn't really work for me. I didn't feel like they're like worth the effort of like looking at. But yeah, I didn't really care for the footnotes. I feel like you could have inserted them if you really needed them.
Footnotes are trash.
Here's the thing. I didn't even know there was footnotes. I kept seeing a little asterisk, but there was never anything at the bottom of the page. I was reading it on Kindle. I didn't know there was actually footnotes until I got to the end of the book, and it just had all of them at the end. And I was like, well, what was the point of these then? Like, So I didn't
if you read it on there.
In the audiobook, it was bad. Just bad. They didn't make any sense. I didn't understand why they were there. Could have definitely done without them.
Yeah. And on the Kindle, if you ever see an asterisk, if you click on it, it'll pop up the footnote for you.
Don't you tell me how to read a book. God damn it. I'm a novice with my Kindle for sure. Oh, so
yeah. I love it.
I need some teachings.
Yeah, I like it more than hardback for sure and paperback.
I finally got poor enough. I can't support buying like 12 books a week. So I'm switching to the Kindle model going forward.
Yeah. Libby. Shout out Libby.
Shout out Libby. Definitely. Always shout out Libby. No free shout outs, but Libby.
All right. Will Compton. All right. So before, before we move on from our questions, it'd be remiss if we did do a fuck, marry, kill of some kind.
Okay.
So let's go. Saint Ungulant, who was the guy that was in the desert that was believing in the small gods, Didactylus, or I don't know, we'll go or brother.
Okay. Kill Didactylus.
Dude, fuck you.
Let's see here.
How dare you?
Actually, kill brother. Kill brother. And then I guess I would marry Didactylus and fuck Saint. What was it? Saint what?
Ungulant.
Saint Ungulant. Yeah. You can't marry brother because his memory is too good. It would be an absolute nightmare to be married to somebody that never forgets anything. And he can't really fuck brother either. I mean, I have no indication that he would be good in bed. So
I don't kill him. I don't think he knows what that is, to be honest. Like, you'd have to explain it to him, I think. Like, this is how this is going to work. And then he'd be like, that's gay, well, that's, and I can't do that in our religion. And then it'd be a whole conversation about that, and you'd have to, like, go through homosexuality with him. It would just be a whole thing.
That's why I'm fucking him.
Whoa. Zach wants to be the teacher, not the learner.
You know, when we get to casting, maybe I'll be with you there.
Yeah, it depends.
I mean, I'm kind of into my casting for him, but I don't think he's like known as like a hot heartthrob. But no, I think brother, if you fuck brother, Om can give him like permission to like have sex. But like you said, he probably doesn't know what he's doing. So you show him a YouTube video or your favorite porn or whatever.
YouTube video might not be the best for this.
but Chris was saying, he has a perfect memory. He was able to think of all the stuff that he like learned how to do just based off memory, like escaping that maze. He would be able to learn how to be like the best like fucker out there just by watching a couple like videos online and then just like recreating what he saw in those videos.
So yeah, just fumble around trying. He doesn't have muscle memory. He just has memory.
I don't know. You show him the Kama Sutra, he's going to be weeks of a good time.
He's teachable. I would kill Dialectus because I feel like marrying a philosopher would be hell. They'd always want to like question you or yeah. So I'd hate that. And then, the other guy would just like worship you for your entire life, which doesn't sound that bad.
Yeah.
So, so that's what I'd do.
I'm coming around on this brother stuff now, because he'd definitely he'd be into like the master, you know, like the dominatrix type stuff. He would definitely be, I feel like you could talk him into that stuff, and I'd like to experiment. So,
yeah.
All right. Yeah. I changed my mind. Good argument. Good argument, Zach. I'm going to fuck brother. I'm going to marry Didactylus and kill Saint Undulant. I could not stand that chapter or whatever, that section with Undulant. I had no fucking clue what was happening, really. And he was so annoying.
I would only just leave him in the desert if I got married to him, too. But
yeah.
So you're going to kill him regardless. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, okay. So we're done with that. Did you guys have any like predictions or hot takes or anything? I didn't have any when I was reading through this.
I have a hot take. Of all of the authors I've read, I think tied with Stephen King for me personally. I think Terry Pratchett might be the most overrated author I've ever read. I mean, this was a good book, but holy shit, all of the people obsessed with Terry Pratchett have to read every Discworld, talk about it, relate everything in their lives to these books. I was expecting a lot more out of this, a lot more deeper intellectual thinking. I didn't think it was going to be all laid out so clearly. I thought his writing was going to be more colorful and not so, you know, straightforward. I feel like he rambled a lot in some of these segments. I feel like a lot of the dialogue was unnecessary or repetitive. Like, I had a lot of problems with the way he wrote this book, and I could not believe how obsessed people are with Terry Pratchett after this. Now, caveat, this is one book I've read by him, so, you know.
Yeah. I get what you're saying, because I had a little bit of that too, but I think most of these people probably did read this when they were in high school, and they've been constantly working through it, so it's probably like their comfort books. And, you know, once you see death kind of keep on appearing, you develop like a bond with him too. So, but I do get what you're saying. There's some of those authors that I don't relate to, and I don't quite get why they are small gods essentially, but I'll have to read a few more.
Yeah. We should start making like author tiers, you know? And then every time we read one of these books, do one of these pods, we could like decide where we want to throw these authors into the tiers, you know, because I definitely put Terry Pratchett into one of the lower tiers of books that we've like reviewed so far. But again, I enjoyed the book. I liked it. I gave it a solid 7. So
I'm in no way saying this was a bad book. I'm just saying that I think people really,
this is supposed to be his best work from what I've heard.
people really overemphasize how good these books are. But Zach, you made a great point. I feel like, you know, high school me who was struggling with like understanding religion in my own life, I feel like I would have loved this book and would have probably changed fundamentally how I thought about things. So if I was reading this when I was like 17, I would have had a vastly different image or, outtake on this book. So,
yeah. Zach, we know you have a hot take.
Yeah, give it to us. What do you got?
I mean, honestly, I don't. I mean, my hottest take was be like the audiobook. It was narrated by Andy's, how do you say his last name? Circus. And I wasn't a big fan of his narration. And it's a new narration. It just came out April of 2022. I liked his Om, and I loved his death. I loved his death in Om. But he kind of got a little too cute with it to the point where I needed like subtitles for an audiobook, which would just be like reading the book, which kind of defeated the purpose. But yeah,
see, some of the
characters are really good. Did you understand every word?
Yeah, I thought the reading was great. I really value when the actors that are doing these audiobooks, every character is extremely distinct, and you know exactly who that character is the second you hear them voice it. And Andy Serkis did a really good job with that.
Yeah, it just some of his accent was like a little thick for like my ears, because like usually I will listen to like audiobooks like 2x speed. But this one here, I literally had to listen to it at like 1.3 for most of it, just so I could like understand everything. But no, that was kind of like it. That and like I don't like the no chapters, and I didn't think that the footnotes worked for me. Those are like my hottest takes, but I didn't think that they were that hot. Chris, do you you don't have any?
Oh, I have one more over here too. I don't know if it's really like a hot take per se, but I think this book would have really benefited from some kind of woman character. I mean, if you think about it, there's not a single woman in this book besides brother talking about his mother sometimes. We don't have a single other speaking character woman this entire book. And I think when you're looking at religion, especially throughout the history, you have to look at like a woman's role in religion, which has been very limited historically until, you know, modern times when they're allowed to take a bigger part in the church and bigger part in like ceremony. I mean, even, you know, Catholicism, you know, you're still not allowed to have women priests, I believe. I don't know if that's accurate, but so I think just like a perspective or a character that was a woman would have helped kind of round out the book a little bit more and give it maybe more relatable or maybe a more overarching look at religion. Or
you're completely right. I wouldn't call it a hot take. I would call it a freezing cold take, because you're just so spot on.
Yeah. I didn't really think too much of that. I'm sure it's like done on purpose. I don't, because like I said, I've only read Equal Rights.
Is it misogynistic? Well, or is it the opposite? Because everybody in this book kind of sucked, and he didn't put any women in it. So.
Yeah. Well, the only thing I'm like comparing it to is Equal Rights, and that is like 90% women characters. Like it's all women, and it is kind of about gender norms. Because I'll give you like a quick like 2-second synopsis of like the beginning of Equal Rights. Is a wizard is about to die, and he has to like hand off his like magical staff to like the seventh born son of a seventh born son, and he finds one that's just being born, gives them the staff, and then he dies and meets death. But then they realize that it was a woman that he gave that staff to, so she's gonna become like the first female wizard, which is a huge no-no. So she starts getting magical powers, so then she goes like lives with like a witch that like teaches her like witch magic, and it's about witches, but also it's like witches are for women, like wizards are like male magic, and kind of overcoming that and saying like women can be wizards too. So that's the only reason why I didn't think too much of him not including a woman in the story, is because he does do some like commentary on gender norms and expectations like that in his other works.
Well, I think it was fully intentional. I think he did it as a way to show that like women didn't have, you know, rights or power in this society, and so why would they be included in this book? I mean, you don't see women perspectives in the Bible either. You get a little bit of Mary sometimes, but like you don't ever get from her mouth what happens. I think it was probably a reflection of that, but and I can't speak for, you know, like any other religion, because I don't know it that well, but I think it's got to be intentional, but still, I think it would have benefited from something on there or a woman in there.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Well, cool. That was all. That was my other hot take. But all right, should we cast this thing? Who are we putting in the movie?
Okay, I've got brother. I got brother.
Okay,
hit us.
Let's yeah, let's hear it.
Channing Tatum.
Way too hot to be brother.
He's too hot to be brother.
No,
he's
way too hot to be brother. Way.
Think about it. They're all so jealous of him because he's so good looking, but he's like a dunce. And Channing Tatum can play a dunce. You know?
Yeah, but brother ended up being, you know, the smartest of any of them, the deepest thinker, best memory, the most intuitive. In the end, is that
just
a character
like how
that
Channing
you...
Tatum? Just like how Channing Tatum isn't actually a dunce.
Are we sure about that?
I think so.
All right. Well, yeah.
Channing Tatum, like, he do a good job acting it, but I would not get past how hot he is. That'd be.
You guys just got convinced that there's no other choice than fucking brother, but you just can't imagine it being Channing Tatum.
I mean, didn't imagine him so hot.
We're putting Channing Tatum in there. I'm definitely fucking brother. Let's get that straight right now.
Vorbis, Willem Dafoe.
That's perfect.
Yeah, that's a good
I love
one.
That I was thinking. Oh my god, plays Dumbledore. In the new
Gambon,
no, Jude Law.
Oh, yeah, Jude
I was thinking Jude Law for Vorbis, would be or Didactylus, even
he's
actually.
A little young, maybe. Yeah, maybe Didactylus. I like him for Didactylus.
I could see that, or even Nun, or whatever that guy's name is. Dun, Noon, Nern. Yeah. I was thinking for brother, I had a young Matt Damon.
Matt,
he's too hot, too.
Damon.
You guys are picking like hot ass.
Exactly,
actors.
Man.
Why can't brother be hot? He's an idiot. He's not.
There was zero sex appeal. There was nothing about.
What does he even look like in the book?
Matt Damon's not that hot. Come on, that's my hot take. Matt Damon's.
Oh
not
my
that
gosh,
hot.
Look at Matt Damon in like the late '90s, early 2000s.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but brother is supposed to be like huge, right?
I think he's supposed to be taller or like bigger, like
he's
wider.
Supposed to be,
maybe
yeah, he's supposed to be a big boy.
Oh. Never mind. Take it back. How do you like them apples? all right. That wasn't a good pick then. Sorry. I'll take that back.
Let's see here.
No, it's fine. My actor for brother, he's not like big, and I do find him kind of attractive too, but I don't think he's in the same tier as your guys' hot brothers are. I am casting.
Watch the use of hot brothers on here, man.
I'm casting Jesse Plemons for brother.
All right, hold on. Let me see who that is.
Jesse Plemons is the best. I was muted there for a second. I love that. That's so good.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Jesse
Plemons.
Clemens.
Have you seen Breaking Bad?
Yeah.
Oh, with a P, right?
Okay. Yeah, with a P.
All right, yeah, this guy's great. This guy's basically Matt Damon.
Yeah,
he's like a tier below.
What about Kevin James? No, I hate it.
Kevin James can play Nimrod or whatever that guy's name is.
Yeah, he could play Nimrod. Yeah,
yeah. For Vorbis, I had Dennis Haysbert, the guy from the Allstate commercial. Like Allstate, you're in good hands. I don't know. I think he can like play that like menacing. He has like that nice deep voice. Like I'd be afraid of him if he was like questioning me. So that would be my pick for Vorbis.
I like that one too. Okay.
Those are the only two people I cast were those two.
If we did two and then Willem Dafoe as Death, I think that's a great cast.
Oh
right
yeah,
there.
Willem Dafoe
yeah.
would be a
and
good
then I would do David Spade voicing Alm.
Oh my god. I do not co-sign David Spade for Alm.
That was on a whim.
I love it. I love it.
Who would you do? Who would be Alm?
Who would?
Whose voice? I mean, it'd
honestly,
Andy.
Andy Serkis.
Yeah,
he did a great job.
Yeah, I agree with that. But if he couldn't do it, I would do one of those like classic voice actors from like our childhood, like a Mike Myers or an Eddie Murphy or.
I would do like Bob Odenkirk for the voice of for the voice of Om.
Bob Odenkirk, yeah. Somebody that just could really get mad and curse people out, you know?
Well, anyways, I think Zach had the best casting. My options were garbage, but good job, Zach. We'll get you. Yeah, we'll get the script written here soon and start.
Well, and for this book, I really don't think it would make a good movie or a TV show. I think if you had to adapt it, I feel like if you just did like an animated cartoon, I think that'd be like the best vehicle for it. Because I can't imagine like a live action turtle. Yeah. Like walking around, you know what I mean? Like that.
I think I agree with you. I don't see this being adapted. It's really not like a lot of the best and funniest parts of this book were all about how it was written. So it would just be really hard. I guess when like a turtle falls on Vorbis, you could make that work in a TV show, but he just did it so well. I don't know. I don't think I'd really even want it to be. Adapted,
I wouldn't watch it if it was a TV show. So, yeah. I mean, if it was like a short, you know, like a 30-minute short, maybe I'd watch that. I don't really think you could get into the depths of the book in just 30 minutes. So I wouldn't watch it regardless. Maybe like a play. Maybe you can make like a good like play out of this, perhaps. But
Yeah, I think like a stage adaptation would work. I feel like stage adaptation or a Disney like 2D animated cartoon to kind of keep the whimsicalness of it.
Yeah.
But I think stage would work.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's hit MVP, LVP. Let's do MVP. Do we have the loser's like Vorbis, probably.
Yeah, I feel like both of these are pretty easy. Like the MVP is brother or Om, I guess.
I would say the MVP would be Didactylus. Like his lifelong theory of the world being on a turtle was finally realized, and he became like the philosopher of the entire world. Like his life goal was met. Brother really didn't have goals. He didn't really have anything that he was trying to accomplish. He just kind of did. I think the Didactylus had the biggest come up.
That's a good one. My other like LVP would be Brother Nimrod. Because he had a stupid name. He like disappeared pretty early on in the book. And it seemed like he was like always horny. Like anytime something happened, he would like drop hints. Like remember like the melons? He got like turned on by the melons and he had to go take like a cold bath or like take a lap around the building or something.
I think he kind of just zoned out the Brother Nimrod stuff.
Yeah, he was just like a weird guy. So he'd be like my LVP.
All right, any other last thoughts, anything else that you want to get in before we wrap up here?
I don't think so.
Fun read.
Yep, fun read. First foray to Terry Pratchett. Mm-hmm. Mildly successful. I'll probably read another Discworld book, so
yeah. I'll definitely keep on reading Discworld books.
At some point, I'll move on, but it's at the bottom of my reading list right now, and that's a long reading list currently. So, once I get through all the Wheel of Times, maybe I'll add that on. But still working through those. Yeah. All right. Well, great. Thanks everyone for listening. You know, if you haven't yet, please follow us on wherever you're listening to podcasts. Subscribe. We have a Twitter account too, if you want to follow that too. We're going to be moving on to a new book next week. In 2 weeks, we haven't decided yet, but make sure that you catch up with kind of our in-between podcast that just goes over fantasy news and all of the things going on in the fantasy world. It's kind of a shorter, easier read or easier listen. So be sure to catch up on those too. We'll see y'all next week. Thanks for listening. And we are the Knights of the Hardcover.